has changed the Christmas plans at the last minute. What can I do? This is the single most common question that I get asked in December. Judges absolutely hate last minute changes because it causes instability for the children. If you have a court order, the plan is the plan. It's not optional. My ex won't confirm Christmas contact at all. What do I do? You send messages, you try to finalise the plan, you ask for confirmation, and they just don't answer. Silence can be a tactic. Silence is a form of control. Silence keeps you anxious and uncertain. Christmas is not a weapon. Do not use it as one. My ex wants Christmas every year. Is that fair? Absolutely, it's not fair. Children deserve magical memories with both families, not just one. So here's how you take the power back. I just wanted to take a moment to show my appreciation for all of you and just thought I would ask of you, if not already, could you please subscribe to Tea with the Queen podcast? It helps us a lot and shows me and the team that you are enjoying the content that we are making. We are only just getting started. We have some brilliant guests lined up in the new year. So if you would like to come along on the journey, please press that subscribe button. Thank you and on with the podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. Today, we're doing something that I know so many of you have been waiting for, the Christmas Survival Guide for Separated Parents. Christmas is one of those times that can bring out the absolute best in people and, unfortunately, sometimes the absolute worst. When you're separated, when emotions are already high and when there's history there, Christmas can become a pressure cooker. I always say that Christmas doesn't create problems, it exposes them. It exposes the communication issues, the control issues, sometimes even the unresolved disputes. And sometimes it exposes just how much one parent wants to make life difficult for the other one. So this episode is here to give you clarity, confidence, and a sense of control heading into the holiday period. I'm going to take you through over 20 real-life questions, questions that I get every single December without fail. And I'm going to talk you through what the law says, what judges expect, and most importantly, what will actually protect your children during the holidays. And guys, I get that this is totally different from the normal podcast that I do. Obviously, I've got no guest with me today. But what I see as a family lawyer all the time through the month of December is the same questions. Questions that I feel are really important, particularly if this is maybe your first Christmas since separation, or maybe you're the parent that's going to be on your own without the children this Christmas for the first time. Perhaps you're the parent that was promised Christmas contact and now your ex has broken that promise. And if you're listening because you're anxious or emotional or dreading Christmas without your children, I want you to know that you're not alone and that everything you're feeling is completely normal. So grab a cup of tea, sit back and let's get into this. So the first question that I have is, my ex has changed the Christmas plans at the last minute. What can I do? This is the single most common question that I get asked in December. So let's paint the picture. You've agreed Christmas plans weeks ago, maybe even months ago. You've told the kids, you've organised the food, the presents, extended family, work shifts, travel, the whole thing. And then out of nowhere, your ex decides, actually, I want to change things. Maybe they say they're working, maybe their families change plans, maybe they suddenly want more time, or, and this is the most common one, they just want to assert control. Now, here's the reality. If you have a court order, the plan is the plan. It's not optional. They don't get to rewrite it because they feel like it. They can ask you politely, but you are under no obligation to agree. If you don't have a court order, things become a little more fluid. But the principle stays the same. You do not have to jump because someone else shouts jump. Your priority is to stay child-focused and reasonable. What you do is this. You acknowledge their message. You respond calmly. You say something like, "We agreed these plans for the children. I've made arrangements based on that agreement. Last-minute changes aren't in their best interests, but I'm open to discussing a sensible alternative after Christmas." And here's why that approach works. It shows that you're not refusing out of spite, but you're also not being pushed around. Judges absolutely hate last-minute changes, unless there's a genuine emergency, because it causes instability for the children. I once had a case where a mum wanted to switch Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, literally the day before, not because of work, not because of illness, but because her new partner wanted to do something else. And the judge called it unacceptable emotional manipulation. So if your ex is pulling this trick, stay calm, stick to what was agreed, document everything, and don't let yourself be dragged into the drama. Okay, so another question that I get asked is, my ex won't confirm Christmas contact at all. What do I do? This one drives people absolutely mad, and I completely understand why. You send messages, you try to finalise the plan, you ask for confirmation, and they just don't answer. Silence can be a tactic. Silence is a form of control. Silence keeps you anxious and uncertain. So here's how you take the power back. You send one clear, polite, firm message, not 15, not 20, one. Something like, "Hi, I'm confirming the Christmas arrangements as previously discussed. Handover will be at time, place. If I don't hear from you to the contrary, I'll go ahead on that basis." This does two things. One, it gives them an opportunity to engage. Two, it prevents them later claiming, "Oh, but I didn't know." If you have a court order, follow the order regardless. If you don't, follow the last agreed plan or the most child-focused proposal. And when they inevitably try to blame you later for not communicating, you have evidence that you did communicate and they chose not to respond. Judges pick up on this pattern very quickly. Silence doesn't make them look powerful, it then makes them look obstructive. Okay, next question. My ex wants Christmas every year. Is that fair? Absolutely, it's not fair. Christmas is a special day. Judges want children to experience both parents at Christmas over the years. There is no world where a parent gets every Christmas forever, unless the other parent has no interest at all. The legal principle is children should enjoy significant days with both sides of their family. Most commonly, we will have 1 year with parent A and the following year with parent B. Or if logistically it's possible, we're going to split the day. Or we're going to do Christmas on a different day to balance things out. You might have an ex who argues, "But the kids prefer my house," or "My family always do the big Christmas," or "It's traditional." But tradition does not override a child's right to equal experiences. And here's the key point. It's not about the parent, it's about the child's memories. Children deserve magical memories with both families, not just one. Another common question I get is, "We live far apart now. Who should the children spend Christmas with?" Well, when parents live far apart, especially more than an hour, Christmas does become more complex. Let's look at the considerations judges actually use. Number one, travel stress. Will the child be in the car for hours on Christmas Day? Number two, emotional impact. Will they miss siblings or cousins? Number three, practicality. Who's able to provide a stable, relaxed Christmas? Number four, history. What's been done in previous years? What's the routine been? Number five, fairness across the years. If one parent gets this year, the other gets next. What judges do not consider is which parent is more fun, or who has the nicer tree, or who's bought the biggest gifts. My advice oftentimes is, if your ex lives far away, propose alternating years, but organise travel around the children's comfort. For example, 1 year you do the long drive, next year they do it. Or Christmas at one parent's house and New Year at the other. This gives the children a rhythm and gives both parents quality time. My children say they want to stay with me, but my ex disagrees. What do I do? This is emotionally tough because as a parent, when your child says, I want to be with you, your instinct is to protect that. But let's break this down carefully. Children's wishes matter, absolutely they do. But children also avoid conflict. They tell each parent what they think that parent wants to hear. Children can feel guilty about letting someone down. Children also don't understand long-term consequences. So what you do is this. You listen, you acknowledge, you do not promise anything. You say something like, thanks for telling me how you feel. It's okay to enjoy Christmas with both parents. Let the grown-ups sort it out. You never say, tell the judge you want to stay with me, or your mom or dad is forcing you. Let them express feelings, not make decisions. If this ever goes to court, a CAFCAS officer will speak with the child in a safe, neutral setting, and they're trained to get to the truth without pressure. And remember, one emotional comment from a child shouldn't dictate a legal plan, but a consistent pattern over time absolutely can. My ex is using Christmas as leverage to get more contact overall. Another popular question. You think you're discussing Christmas. Your ex thinks you're negotiating the entire parenting schedule for 2025. So here's what you do. You separate the two issues. You say, I'm really happy to discuss the long-term schedule in January, but for now, let's focus on Christmas so the children know what's happening. This draws a boundary without escalating. Judges appreciate parents who keep the conversation focused and refuse to be dragged into a wider battle. Christmas contact is not the venue to renegotiate everything. It's a standalone holiday arrangement. What do I do if my ex refuses handover on Christmas Day? This one is heartbreaking because emotions are so high. But here's what not to do. Do not turn up at the house demanding to see the children. Do not start shouting. Do not call their family and get them involved. Do not create a scene. Do not post anything on social media. That behaviour will be used against you. Here's what you do instead. You go to the handover point if it's safe. You wait a reasonable amount of time. You send a calm message. Something like, I'm here for handover as we've agreed. Please confirm when you'll arrive. If they refuse or don't show, you leave after 20 to 30 minutes. Then you document it. You screenshot the messages. You note the time. You keep your tone calm. You do not retaliate by withholding next time. That puts you at the same level, and judges see both parents as problematic. I've seen a lot of cases where the parent who stayed calm, even when they're devastated, was praised by the court for protecting the emotional environment. Next question. Can I apply to court urgently before Christmas? Every year, thousands of people ask this, but urgent Christmas hearings are incredibly rare. A court will only list an urgent hearing in December for immediate risk to a child's safety, threat of abduction, a parent blocking all contact, not just quarrelling over times, but they won't list an urgent hearing for disagreements about presents, minor timing arrangements. He wants Christmas morning, not Christmas afternoon. She changed the plan last minute, but still allowing contact. Family courts simply don't have the capacity for non-emergencies in December. That doesn't mean you shouldn't apply, but you must be realistic. If you're filing an application on the 15th or 20th of December, chances are the hearing's going to be in March or April. But, and this is important, just applying can sometimes calm things down. If your ex receives that court application email, it sometimes has a magical effect. Suddenly they're much more cooperative because they know the court will scrutinise their behaviour at the first hearing. So urgent hearings, well, they're rare. Applications sometimes are useful, but pinning your Christmas hopes on a December court date, not wise. Okay, I thought it'd be really useful if we looked at some of the court orders and the legal tactics that become really important in December. So another question that I get asked a lot is, can the police enforce a Christmas contact order? This is a really important one because a lot of parents think that if their ex breaches the Christmas order, they can call the police and the police will sort it out. But here's the truth. The police do not enforce family court orders. That's not their role. Family law is a civil matter, not a criminal one. Now, there is an exception. If your order has a penal notice attached to it, which is essentially a warning that the court can impose sanctions, the police might attend to keep the peace. But they still won't physically remove a child from one parent and hand them over to another, unless, of course, the child is in danger. Here's what the police can do. They can make sure that nobody is breaching the peace. They can record what's happening. They can advise you to report the breach to the court. They can step in only if there is risk to the child's safety. But they cannot act as enforcement officers for the family court. I know it's frustrating because as a parent, you think, but the order is clear. It says the children should be with me at 2 p.m. on Christmas Day. And you're right, you should have them. But enforcement lies with the court, not the police. So the way that you handle this is to document everything, stay calm, don't create a scene, don't shout or threaten. You're then going to file a C79 enforcement application after Christmas. Courts do take breaches seriously, especially Christmas breaches, but you must let the legal process handle it, not the police. What if the order isn't specific about Christmas? This is incredibly common. You might have a detailed order with weekly contacts all mapped out, but Christmas is either missing entirely or handled in one vague sentence like, the parties will agree holiday arrangements between themselves. And of course, Christmas comes and you don't agree. So what happens then? Well, the court expects both parents to behave sensibly. That doesn't mean that you give in, and it doesn't mean that you argue endlessly either. It means that you propose a plan that is reasonable, child-focused and balanced. For example, if the regular schedule lands the children with you on Christmas Day this year, that might be fine, but you still consider fairness over the years. You might say, well, the children are with me based on the normal schedule, but I'm happy to ensure that next Christmas falls with you so that we rotate fairly. Judges love parents who think long term, not just this year. Another thing to do is to look at the history. Where were the children last Christmas? Did you split the day? Did you alternate the years? Judges will often stick with what the children are used to unless there's a really good reason to change it. If there truly is no pattern and the order is silent, then you're going to fall back on the principle of reasonableness and balance. The good news is this is an opportunity to fix the order in the new year. You can apply to vary the order and say, we struggled to agree this year. We need a clear, structured section on Christmas going forward. And honestly, once it's written down properly, life becomes so much easier. My ex won't return the children after Christmas. What do I do? I've seen this so many times, and it's one of the most stressful situations any separated parent can face. First, breathe. Your ex withholding the children is incredibly upsetting, but you must remain composed because your reaction will be scrutinised later. Here's what to do immediately. Send a clear, polite message, something like, it's now 3 o'clock and I'm expecting the children back as agreed. Please confirm what time you will return them. No arguing, no threats. If they refuse or ignore you, send one follow-up. I'm documenting today's breach of our agreement or court order. Please return the children as arranged. Do not go to their home unless it's the agreed pickup point. And even then, do not cause a scene. Do not involve the children by calling their phones repeatedly. Do not retaliate later by withholding them from your next scheduled handover. Judges don't like tit-for-tat behaviour. They will come down harder on the parent who reacts emotionally. After Christmas, you then file a C79 enforcement application. This can lead to make up time for you, penalties for the breaching parent, fines, community service, or even in the really extreme cases, imprisonment. And let me tell you, judges do take Christmas breaches especially seriously because they know how emotional Christmas time is. They know how upsetting it is for the parent and destabilising for the child. I once had a judge say to a parent, "Christmas is not a weapon. Do not use it as one." And they mean it. Your calmness now is your power later. The parent who stays measured is the parent the court will trust. Can I record conversations at handover as evidence? The short answer is yes, but you must be smart about it. You are allowed to record your own interactions. That means if you're at handover and it's public and it's your ex speaking to you, you can record that. What you cannot do is plant recording devices. You can't record inside their home. You can't secretly record in private spaces. You can't use the children to record anything. The rule of thumb is this: if you can hear it with your own ears, you can record it. Now, here's the important part. Judges don't want hours and hours of audio. They don't have time and they won't listen to it all. But if something key happens, aggression, threats, manipulation, then a short, clear clip can be incredibly powerful. And I want to say this: record for evidence, not for vindication. What I mean by that is, don't get drawn into baiting your ex to say something incriminating. Don't poke, don't provoke. Your best evidence is always captured when you remain calm and they reveal themselves naturally. Think of recording as insurance. You hope you don't need it, but if something goes wrong, you'll be grateful you have it. Will a judge take into account my ex's Christmas behaviour later in court? Absolutely, without question. Christmas is what I call a high conflict testing point. It reveals character. It reveals priorities. It reveals who can regulate their emotions and who can't. Judges often see Christmas as a snapshot of the whole parenting dynamic. Because if one parent behaves unreasonably when emotions are high, chances are they behave unreasonably at other times too. So here's what a judge usually will pick up on. Who remained child-focused? That is so important. Who communicated clearly? Who escalated unnecessarily? Who withheld the children? Who changed plans with no good reason? Who tried to control or manipulate? Who stayed calm under pressure? So yes, Christmas behaviour absolutely can influence future decisions about contact, long-term orders and even custody. I once had a judge say in court, "Christmas is a magnifying glass for parental behaviour." That really stuck with me because Christmas doesn't make someone unreasonable, it just magnifies what's already there. So if your ex has been obstructive, chaotic, aggressive, controlling, or even inconsistent at Christmas, document it, not with anger, with calm clarity. Judges don't reward perfection, they reward consistent, stable behaviour, especially in high-pressure moments. My ex has a new partner and wants them included at Christmas. Can I refuse? This is a delicate one because it taps into emotion more than law. Let's start with the legal position. You cannot dictate who is in the other parent's household during their contact time. Unless the new partner poses a specific, evidence-based risk, you cannot refuse Christmas contact simply because the new partner will be there. Now let's talk about the emotional side. I get that it can hurt. Seeing your children spend Christmas with a new partner can feel like a punch in the stomach, especially if the separation is recent or if the new partner was involved in the breakup. Your feelings are valid. Your discomfort is real. But those emotions cannot become part of the legal decision making. What you can do is to set boundaries. You can ask to be introduced to the new partner before Christmas. You can ask for reassurance about sleeping arrangements. You can request gradual introductions if they've barely met, but you cannot say they can't be there. Judges don't accept that. Children are capable of having relationships with new partners without diminishing their bond with you. And often the worry that you feel passes much quicker than you expect. So instead of focusing on who is there, focus on what you can control. The environment you create, the traditions that you build, the emotional stability that you provide. Okay. Let's talk now about money, gifts, and holiday logistics. My ex and I can't agree on presents. What's reasonable? This one I get a lot just before Christmas, because Christmas isn't just about the contact. It's also about the stuff, the presents, the expectations, the competition. And sometimes, unfortunately, Christmas becomes a stage for parents to one-up each other through gifts. So let's talk about what's reasonable. In an ideal world, both parents communicate and coordinate. You'd agree on what the children really want, who's buying what, how much you're both spending, and whether the big gifts stay in one home or travel between homes. But we don't live in an ideal world for many separated families. If we did, I'd probably be out of a job. So let me reassure you, courts will not get involved in gift disputes. They expect parents to manage this themselves, and they expect disagreements to be handled in a child-focused way. Here's the approach I always recommend. Buy what you want to buy for your home. Do not seek permission. Do not feel pressured. If you want to get one big item, get it. If you want to keep it simple, do that. Keep communication simple and non-confrontational. That's really important. Message your ex once. I'm getting X and Y for Christmas, just letting you know in case you're planning something similar. After that, leave it. Do not chase, do not argue. If your ex refuses to coordinate, don't take the bait. Some people intentionally withhold information so they can accuse you later of copying or undermining. Just don't engage. The children don't care who bought what. They care about the excitement. If your ex buys extravagant or showy gifts, let it go. That's about them, not you. Children don't measure love in price tags. They measure it in emotional presence. And the older they get, the more they see through performative parenting. So the bottom line is this: you do what works for your home. You focus on the child's experience, not on matching or competing. Children don't remember the cost. They remember the feeling. Who pays for Christmas travel? Christmas travel causes so much conflict, especially when families live far apart, and especially when one parent has made a unilateral decision to move. So let's break it down practically and legally. General rule, the parent who wants the change usually pays for the travel, or you split it fairly so neither of you is overburdened. So for example, if you live 1 to 2 hours apart and you're alternating Christmas between households, a common arrangement is that one parent does the drop-off and the other parent does the pick-up. This then will feel balanced and avoids resentment. But here's the key point. If one parent moved away, especially for a new partner, new job or lifestyle change, the travel burden often falls more heavily on them. Judges have been increasingly clear about this over the years. If you choose to move, you accept the impact on travel. That doesn't mean the moving parent must do everything every time, but it does mean the other parent shouldn't be punished or inconvenienced excessively for a decision they didn't make. Now let's talk about Christmas specifically. Christmas Day travel can be stressful for children, so you look at what's least disruptive. Sometimes that means doing travel the night before, meeting halfway, or agreeing to alternate long distance years. And here's a really helpful tip. Never make travel disputes about the parents. Always frame them around the child. Say things like, "The children get very tired with long journeys on Christmas Day. Could we adjust this so it's easier for them?" This will land much better than, why should I have to do all of the driving? Judges respond strongly to anything that shows you're thinking about the children's well-being and not convenience. Okay, my ex bought the kids very expensive gifts to show off. Can I say no? This one touches on pride, frustration, and sometimes jealousy, which are all perfectly human feelings. So let's start with the legal position. You cannot stop your ex buying expensive gifts, even if it's inappropriate, even if it's over the top, even if it's totally unnecessary. Judges simply don't adjudicate on gift choices unless there's an issue of safety. But here's the nuance that you can work with. You can decide what items are allowed in your home. You can say, well, that stays at dad's house or that stays at mum's. This is absolutely acceptable. You have the right to maintain boundaries in your home. If your ex is using gifts to show off or to win the children, the worst thing you can do is join the competition. You undermine yourself, you overspend, and you teach the children the wrong message about love. Instead, you become the safe, consistent, emotionally present parent. And trust me, children feel that. Young children are dazzled by big gifts, but older children see the truth. I've spoken to so many teenagers over the years who say things like, "Dad buys the big stuff because he feels guilty." Or, "Mom spoils us to look good, but she's never actually around." Children see deeper than we think that they do. Avoid criticism. Avoid sarcastic comments like, "That must have cost a fortune," typical. Instead, focus on the experience. The goal isn't to outshine your ex. The goal is to shine in your own way. My ex won't tell me what they're doing with the children on Christmas. Can they keep it a secret? This question often comes from a place of anxiety. Parents want to know what their children are doing. They want reassurance. They want transparency. So let's clarify what your ex is obliged to tell you and what they're not. They must tell you travel details, where the children will be sleeping, emergency contact information, if they're taking the children out of the country or far from home, anything relevant to safety. They are not legally required to tell you their full Christmas schedule, who they're visiting, what time they're opening presents, what church or event they're attending, every minute of their day. And that can feel uncomfortable, especially if your ex is not someone you trust. But part of co-parenting is accepting that each parent gets to parent independently during their time. Christmas does not override that. So here's how you handle it emotionally and practically. Ask politely once, "Could you let me know where the children will be staying and any travel plans?" If they provide the essentials, then leave it there. Avoid interrogating messages. Questions like, "Who will they be with? Are your parents coming? What time are they opening presents?" All of that can be interpreted as controlling. Focus on your own Christmas time. And this is a big mindset shift for many parents. If the children are safe, protected, and cared for, you do not need to micromanage the details. Okay, so let's look at some of the emotional and practical challenges that parents have over Christmas. "I'm struggling emotionally with being away from my children on Christmas Day. How do parents cope?" This one breaks my heart every time someone asks it, because Christmas can be incredibly lonely for separated parents, especially if it's your first one apart. So let's unpack this one gently. It is completely normal to feel sad, empty, anxious, or overwhelmed at the thought of being without your children on Christmas Day. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you selfish. It doesn't mean you love your children too much or too little. It means you're human. Here are some strategies that genuinely help. Plan your own version of Christmas. You do not have to sit at home staring at the clock. Create a second Christmas for the day that you do have the children. Make it special, make it funny, make it your thing. Children remember traditions, not dates. You could even give it a name: Christmas 2, Festive Day, Mom's Christmas, Dad's Christmas, whatever it is. Stay busy with supportive people. Don't isolate yourself unless it genuinely feels healing. Spend the day with friends or siblings, cousins, your parents, anyone who lifts you emotionally. You're not an afterthought. You're not a burden. You are loved. Don't scroll social media. Social media on Christmas Day is a nightmare. Nobody posts, "My children cried 3 times already," or "The turkey burned and I'm tired." It's all curated and it can make you feel worse. So give yourself permission to disconnect. Remind yourself, this is temporary. It's not permanent. You will have other Christmases. You will have magical memories. And your bond with your child is not determined by the date on the calendar. Talk to your child in a way that reassures them. Children can feel guilty about being away from you. You tell them, "I'm absolutely fine. I want you to have a lovely Christmas and we'll have our own special day soon." Be their anchor. Be their emotional safety. That's what they remember years later. And here's a final note. I've worked with hundreds of separated parents over the years, and almost every single one tells me the first Christmas was the hardest. After that, it got easier. You're not alone and you will get through this. My child feels guilty about spending Christmas away from me. What do I say? Children can often carry guilt. They don't know how to articulate. They worry about upsetting you. They worry that you'll be sad. They worry that you're choosing between parents. So the first thing you do is take the pressure off their shoulders. You say something like, "You never need to worry about me. It's okay to enjoy Christmas with both sides of your family. You're allowed to have fun. I am happy and we'll have our own special day too." This is incredibly powerful because it releases them from emotional responsibility. Here's what you must avoid saying though. "I'm really going to miss you. Christmas won't be the same without you. I'll be all on my own. I'm sad you're not here." These comments might seem innocent, but they create emotional burden and guilt. Let your child enjoy Christmas freely. Show them you're okay. Show them you support their happiness. Children thrive when both parents give them permission to love freely, live freely, and experience joy without guilt. My ex is bad-mouthing me over Christmas. How do I protect my children emotionally? This is one of the most painful issues separated parents can face. Not the legal side, but the emotional toll it takes on both you and the children. Christmas can bring out tensions, insecurities, jealousy, and old resentments. And some parents, sadly, use this time to score points. You might hear things like, "Your mum doesn't care about you. Your dad is ruining Christmas. If she loved you, she'd let you stay here. Your other parent is selfish." It's not only toxic, but it's damaging, and it puts children right in the emotional crossfire. So let's talk about what you can control. Never mirror the behaviour. Do not badmouth back. Do not correct every insult. Do not defend yourself through the child, because all that does is pull the child deeper into conflict. Stay the emotional anchor. Stay the calm one. Give your child emotional safety. You say things like, "It's okay for you to love both your parents." Sometimes grown-ups say things when they're upset, but that's not your responsibility. "You can always ask me questions. I will always tell you the truth in a way that's safe for you." This will reassure children without undermining or attacking the other parent. Don't interrogate the child about what was said. A gentle, "How did your day go?" is absolutely fine. But digging for details puts them in the middle. If something serious comes out, naturally, then stay calm. Inside you might be raging, but on the outside you must be completely composed. Document patterns calmly. If this becomes a repeated issue, you record the incidents, dates, and the wording. Judges take a very dim view of parents who speak badly of the other in front of children. In fact, in some of my cases, subtle but consistent bad-mouthing was treated as emotional harm. Remember, children eventually see the truth. It might take years, it might take adolescence, But children always figure out who stayed consistent, who stayed respectful, and who stayed emotionally safe. You don't have to win the narrative, you just have to be the stable parent. I want to introduce new Christmas traditions, but my ex says I'm confusing the children. Now, this is a really interesting one because it touches on identity, belonging, and post-separation rebuilding. The reality is this: children can handle multiple sets of traditions extremely well. Most children in separated families grow up celebrating two Christmas dinners, two sets of stockings, 2 days of gift giving, two versions of Christmas Eve rituals, and they love it. Think about it from a child's perspective. They get more magic, more excitement, more tradition, more memories. So if your ex is saying you're confusing them, what they usually mean is, I'm uncomfortable with the idea of you having a life and traditions separate from me. That's about them, not the children. Here's the legal and emotional truth. You are absolutely allowed to create your own traditions in your home. You don't need permission. You don't need to negotiate it. You simply create memories that feel meaningful and loving. Traditions can be a Christmas Eve box, special hot chocolate, matching pajamas, a silly family game, or watching a particular film, doing a treasure hunt or baking something together, writing a letter of thanks. These traditions help children feel grounded in each home. They build a sense of belonging. Children don't get confused by traditions, they get comforted by them. So my advice is, create your traditions with confidence, joy, and consistency. Your children will cherish them. My ex is drinking heavily over Christmas. Can I refuse contact? Now, this is a very sensitive topic because Christmas often involves alcohol, and some people struggle with moderation. When you're co-parenting, this becomes a real concern. Let's start with the legal approach. You cannot refuse contact just because your ex drinks. Many adults drink at Christmas, and that alone isn't grounds for withholding. However, if you have genuine evidence that their drinking creates a risk to the child's safety or well-being, you have more options. Courts make a big distinction between someone who historically has drunk too much versus someone who is currently drinking excessively during contact time. A past drinking problem doesn't automatically justify stopping Christmas contact, but current behaviour that endangers the child can. Reasonable boundaries. You can absolutely say, I'm uncomfortable with alcohol being consumed during your contact time. Could we agree that handovers happen while sober? You can also request breathalyzer tests if it's part of a court order. Sober handover times. No alcohol during the day if they're responsible for the child. Trust your instincts, but evidence your actions. If your ex has been drunk at handover before, document it. If they message you slurring their words or incoherent, screenshot it. If the child reports unsafe behaviour, write it down. Judges respond to patterns, not speculation. If you refuse contact without evidence, be careful. A court may see this as gatekeeping or hostility. But if you have genuine cause, judges will back you. Here's an example from my own caseload. A father repeatedly appeared at handover, clearly intoxicated, red-eyed, unsteady, slurred speech, the usual stuff. The mother refused handover, documented it politely, and applied to vary the order. The judge agreed that she acted protectively, not maliciously. So the bottom line is, if there's risk, you can act. If there's no evidence, be careful. Your priority is safety. Your power is documentation. Your protection comes from staying measured. My ex keeps FaceTiming excessively when the kids are with me at Christmas. Can I stop it? This is a modern problem. Digital intrusion disguised as concern. FaceTime, WhatsApp video, Messenger. There are so many ways for parents to access the child indirectly, and at Christmas it often becomes excessive. Let's be honest, FaceTiming every few hours isn't about the child. It's about the parent's anxiety or need for control. Reasonable is a check-in call once a day, a quick Merry Christmas video chat, a bedtime call if that's the regular routine. Unreasonable looks like calling repeatedly, interrupting your Christmas Day plans, demanding access during meals or events, becoming agitated if the child doesn't want to talk, expecting immediate responses. So how do you handle it? You set a boundary. You say, of course you can speak to the children. To avoid interrupting our Christmas activities, let's plan two calls, one in the morning and one in the evening. You're not refusing, you're structuring. And if they continue to call excessively, you simply don't answer every time. You return a call at the agreed time and say, we were in the middle of activities. The children are having a great time. What you want to avoid is telling the children to ignore the other parent. Don't block the other parent, and above all else, don't create drama. Make it about routine, not resistance. Two well-timed calls are supportive. 10 calls are intrusive. Boundaries create calm. I thought I'd share with you one of my case stories. I'm going to call it the doorstep Christmas breakdown. It's a case that I've never forgotten because the lesson from it is so powerful and it applies to so many of the situations we've talked about today. A few years ago, I represented a father who was due to collect his children on Christmas Day. There was a very clear arrangement in place. Everything was agreed in writing. He turns up at the mum's house on time, car packed, presents ready, the whole thing. But when he knocked on the door, she refused to let the children come out. There was no explanation, no discussion, just a flat, they're not going. Now, this is where things often go wrong because emotions take over. And believe me, this guy was devastated. He told me later that he felt physically sick, like someone had punched him in the stomach. Most parents in that moment would react emotionally, but he didn't. He stayed calm. He stayed respectful. He didn't shout. He didn't push past. He didn't argue. He simply said, okay, I'm disappointed and I am going to document this and I'll leave now. He went back to his car and he did tell me that he had a cry, but then he drove home to his family who supported him through what was honestly one of the hardest days of his life. In January, we took the matter back to court and the judge asked him, what did you do at the doorstep? He said, I left. I didn't want the children to see an argument. The judge then turned to the mum and said, that is exactly the behaviour I expect from a responsible parent. You, on the other hand, deprive these children of their Christmas time with their father for no reason other than spite. That will not happen again. She was ordered to compensate him with additional time. She also had to attend a separated parents' information programme. And she was warned that further breaches could lead to a change in residency. The lesson is your dignity is your evidence and your calmness is your power. Your behaviour in moments of crisis can change the entire direction of your case. Thank you so much for spending this time with me today. I know Christmas can be a deeply emotional and stressful time for separated parents. There are so many pressures, from logistics to emotions, from last-minute changes to complicated dynamics with ex-partners. But if there's one thing I want you to take away from this episode, it's this. You cannot always control what your ex does. You cannot control how they behave, but you can control how you respond. And your response, your calmness, your clarity, your child-focused approach is your greatest strength, not just in the eyes of the court, but in the eyes of your children. You are building memories. You're creating stability. You are showing them what love looks like when life is difficult. Christmas isn't about one perfect day. It's about the overall sense of security you give your children, the traditions you create, the emotional safety that you offer, the reassurance that they are loved in both homes. So whether this Christmas looks exactly how you hoped it would, or whether it's far from ideal, please know that you are doing your best, and your best is more than enough. And if you're listening to this feeling overwhelmed or anxious, I want you to hear me clearly. You are not alone. So many parents are walking this road with you, and you will get through this. So thank you for joining me for this Christmas survival guide. If this episode helped you, please share it with someone who might need it this year. And most importantly, I wish you and your children a peaceful, magical Christmas, no matter what shape it takes.